Good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 8th December 2020 Tuesday class. We will continue from our sharing from this book, The Essence of Infinite Meaning, Teachings on the Adapted Verse of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. We are at page 58, with the subtitle, Bodhisattvas are peaceful, content, uncontriving, and free from desire. No delusion or discursive thought can affect them. So as usual, we'll have a half an hour of awareness-based meditation before we commence the class. So, you will off the light, and you can have your half an hour of awareness-based meditation. Always remember, develop the training of the mind just to be aware, to realize your true mind. So, the fourth support for awareness-based meditation, I repeat, is relax. Relax into both body and mind, completely relaxed or at ease. Then second support is aware, maintain awareness. The third support is for as long as you can, preferably 24 hours. Then finally the last support is trust. So meditation becomes very easy when you can follow the four support. So have a comfortable posture, a suitable posture, so that you can be in that posture for quite a while to enable you to meditate or to maintain awareness. And to relax body and mind is very easy. So you feel relaxed, at ease, no worry, no problem, nothing. And your body, whether it's tired or what, you will know, just relax into it. The only fear is you may doze off, but if you have cultivated it, you will not. You can maintain awareness. So relax, maintain awareness. Then third support, for as long as you can, to realize your true mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind. When you relax and maintain awareness, you will be able to develop the awareness or understanding of what is going on within your form and mind. You will be able to see the sankhara activity, thought activity, the thought that arises through response to memory, your accumulated memories. So you will see them, you will see them arising, moving, creating. So the awareness is very important. The awareness is the basis of meditation. Through the awareness, you develop understanding, wisdom. And when you are just aware, let things be, all this activity of mind, sankhara or emotion, they will slow down until finally they become very quiet, very still. When they become very still, you will experience like there's a shift of consciousness. Suddenly you experience a type of calmness, a mind that is very quiet, tranquil, still. So that is your true mind. So stay with that, stabilize it. Then after that, use it to meditate. So page 58. So there is a stanza from the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. I'll read to you. The Bodhisattva are peaceful, content, uncontriving, and free from desire. So this is a very typical mind state of a bodhisattva. They are always peaceful, no matter what happens. Their mind state are calm, peaceful, tranquil, and they have this mind that is very different. Then they are contented because they have the wisdom. Then uncontriving means they don't do all those things that people do, that the heedless people do. And they are free from craving or desire. They don't hold on to that craving or desire to do certain type of motive behind type of things they don't have. They always have this understanding to accord and flow. Then they will know exactly what the conditioned world is. Basically, it's empty, no reality. But it has its conditioned Dhamma within. That's why there is such thing as life, existence, law of karma. And because of this law of karma, there is such thing as living being, human being. Then it recognizes relationship, because the law of karma recognizes relationship. But it also has the wisdom of the ultimate Dhamma, the unconditioned Dhamma, where it understands that everything is not what you think. It understands the universal characteristics of all conditioned Dhamma, all phenomena. It's impermanent characteristic, universal characteristic. If you attach and cling, grasp onto it, hold onto it, and want things your way, which is not nature's way, you will suffer. So the second universal characteristic is suffering, affliction, misery. Then if you understand the universal characteristics of impermanent, you will also come to understand, because it's impermanent, it is not a permanent unchanging entity where you can grasp onto, hold on to, cling onto, and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. So the delusion of a permanent unchanging entity, which we call self, is no more. So that self delusion, sakkayaditti, is no more. So that is the universal characteristics of anatta, or non-self nature, which also brings about the understanding of emptiness, empty nature of existence. All of existence looks so real. The conditioned world looks so real. The world of form and consciousness appears so real, so luring. But when you have penetrated the Dhamma, awakened to their universal characteristic, you will come to realize that they are not so real, not what you think, because they are impermanent. They are dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of normal, hence not what you think. And because of that, under ultimate truth understanding, he know you, he know me, there is nothing. Everything just follow nature's law. There is a set of law that governs nature. So this understanding is very important, very profound. All bodhisattvas, they have this understanding. That's why their mind is different. They are very, very different. So we go back to the notes, then you will understand. So I'll read to you again now, maybe you understand. According to this stanza, bodhisattvas are always peaceful. They are contented. There is contentment, content, uncontriving. There is no mischieving, no evil intention, and free from craving or desire. No delusion or discursive thought can affect them, which is very true. Because they have that wisdom to transcend. Then we go into the sharing, the proper written by the author. All affliction arises from delusion. This is very true. And from delusion, it leads to heedless thinking. Or here they use the word discursive thought, means wrong thought. Thought that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So this is heedless thinking. As the mind faces the external temptation of sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch, it continuously gives birth to evils. The evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion are there. So this is very true. So when you lack wisdom, when you don't have the Dhamma understanding, your mundane mind has this problem. It is always caught in temptation. So faces the external temptation, or you become gullible. The world of sight and sound, taste, touch, and tactile. Sorry, taste, touch, and smell. They can lure you. They can have influence over you. They can be rather beguiling. And you can be, they use this word, you can be like, there is an English word I forgot, right? Caught in external temptation is one. There is another English word I cannot recall. It can like mislead you or make you gullible. Beguiling, make you gullible, so that you will cling on to it, hold on to it, grasp on to it. It is like it's like temptation, but temptation is a very strong word. It is like luring, luring, it lure you, it make you interested in them. Or you react to them. And sometimes if it's something positive, your craving, positive craving for it is very strong. And if it's negative craving, which you don't desire, you can end up hating it, rejecting it. The very strong duality. So this phenomenal world of consciousness, based on our senses, that's why they use the word sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. But they miss out one, the mind, the brain, which is mental formation, sankhara, mental thinking, their mental states. And also everything that the mind can do. So all this can distract you, can lure you, and can let you grasp, cling, and hold on to them. And through lack of wisdom, lack of Dhamma understanding, you become attached, cling, grasp, and you hold on to them as if they are very real. In doing so, you suffer. So it continuously gives birth to evil mind state with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. And this is very true. This is how human beings entangle themselves, get themselves into trouble. So the stirring of mind, the way the mind reacts to sense experience, can give rise to affliction, suffering, misery. Mm. That's what the first noble truth is all about. When confronting the reality of life and existence, the eight reality which the Buddha described, if you don't have the wisdom and the understanding, you will suffer. You will become afflicted. So that is what Dhamma is. Then it continued by saying, if the mind can always reside in samadhi, this is very true. But here the word is wrong, and be focused. Focus is not the right word. It's not focus. If the mind can always reside in samadhi, means in the state of samadhi, and is tranquil, still, collected and unwavering, it's not focused. Collected and unwavering is the correct word. Then serene and unperturbed, these are correct words. With the power of such, again, concentration is wrong. Mm. The state of samadhi is the mind is collected and unwavering, but it's not in concentration. Mm. It is a collected mind, unwavering. That's why there is samadhi, means clarity. And this mind does not react to sense experience because it's collected and wavering. You will not waver. You will not be affected or disturbed. You will not stir. Mm. We can naturally avoid giving rise to any kind of delusion and discursive thinking or heedless thinking when we encounter external condition. This is very true. So here they refer to the mind of a bodhisattva, which is always in the state of samadhi. Our mind will be like still water. The analogy is quite correct. Unruffled, calm and quiet. However, if our power of samadhi, the word should be samadhi, not concentration, is not stable. The word should be not stable. Don't use the word not sufficient. Sufficient means you want more. Not stable. And we are unable to enter the samadhi of right mindfulness. This is correct. Samadhi of right mindfulness is not concentration. Mm. Then even a small grain of sand can disturb this still surface. It's using the energy of still water. Anything that drops into it can create disturbance. You heard of this word ripple? Ripple. We all science students, we will know. We are in physics, we study ripple. So when you throw something into a pool of water, and you see the ripple, circle ripple, they move out from that center that is being disturbed. Mm. So I will read on. At one time, I saw a pond that was perfectly clear. Although the surface was undisturbed, I could sense that the water was moving. If you have samadhi, you can sense all this. Yet the pond looked so still that each and every pebble at the bottom could be clearly seen. I could not help but think how the pond is just like our mind. As time continues to pass by, and all the people and matters in the world keep changing or evolving, if our mind can remain as clear and still as the mirror-like surface of the pond, then we have achieved mastery in the cultivation of samadhi. Actually, samadhi is not difficult. Samadhi is just the collected and unwavering mind. So to have real samadhi, you must have that stability of mindfulness. That's why in the formal meditation, when I ask you to train the mind by following the four supports, especially the first three supports, relax, maintain awareness for as long as you can, is to stabilize that mind. When you can stabilize it until it becomes very stable, that itself is samadhi. That is unwavering and collected. But that one is before the wisdom comes. So for you to have true wisdom, true samadhi that is very stable, or that is continuously there, you need the four support, trust. You need to go through trust. You need to locate the gateway to your nature. Then you need to let the internal transformation happen. It's only when your internal transformation happens, like that day I explained, all of the external yin and yang energy that you have developed, they will melt into the gateway and become pure energy. And this pure energy is the one that meditate, activate all the internal movement, the nadis, the chakra and everything. Then this vibration, which is very pure, it will transform your bodily vibration, your consciousness vibration, to make it very fine, because this is wisdom energy. And when it becomes very, very fine, the gross mundane mind cannot withstand that pure energy, that very tranquil type of vibration. That fineness of vibration, it is too fine for the mundane mind to exist. That's how when that thing happens, as you go through the cultivation, the mundane mind starts to slowly collapse and drop off. It's only when the mundane mind collapses and drops off, then only you have the ability to enable your nature to shine forth. Because without the mundane mind, it's like the true mind that was originally clouded by the mundane mind. Because no more mundane mind is like no more cloud, nothing to obscure your true mind. Like the sun's ray, when there is no more cloud, nothing there to obscure. The sun's ray just shine in. That's why you see blue sky, sunny day, clarity. So our nature is the same. When we are not clouded by our emotion, by our thinking, our sankhara activity, by our thought process, then there is clarity. Then that nature shine forth. I call it the supramundane mind. But this mind is not the mundane mind. It is the one with the very fine vibration. The consciousness is very different. And that one has wisdom energy. That one understands. That one is just awareness. It's just aware. Yeah. That's why it is always in the state of either specific phenomenal awareness or spacious awareness without a center. That's what that mind doesn't dwell. That mind is the true nature. That's why when that true nature shines forth, actually it was always there. But it cannot shine forth because we are so heedless. Living beings, before they awaken or connect, they are so heedless, so deluded. They are lost in thought. They don't know that there is another mind. So they are very preoccupied with the mundane mind, the thinking mind, that has become so habitual, so deluded, so heedless. So it keep on getting itself entangled. And since birth until now, the only instrument in life or to live life that they know is the mundane mind, the thinking mind. That's why they are hardly mindful, hardly aware. They hardly even have a glimpse of that true mind. Maybe once a while, once a blue moon, but split second is gone. And you can't make head or tail of what that thing is. That's why it's not easy to realize that true mind, to develop the true awareness-based meditation. That's the reason why nowadays, even among the Buddhist fraternity, meditation become thought-based meditation, no more awareness-based meditation. It's no longer having the understanding to realize the true mind and to use that true mind to live life, to meditate, to awaken, to insight into phenomena that has been lost, maybe forgotten too. That's why thought has become so active, so rampant. The instrument of thought like is controlling the world, overwhelming. So thought leads to technological advancement. The excessive use of thought leads to knowledge, leads to energy field. So all this brings about the shift in civilization when there is too strong an overemphasis on the materialistic world, on the what they call knowledge-based type of training. That's why science and technology take preference, prevail. Science, technology, mathematics, technical things take precedence. And the world is technologically driven. We are the last 30, 40 years, we progress very far as technological knowledge is concerned, science and technology. And this is what the scientific law of Uttuniyama and Bijaniyama is all about. When you put too much emphasis on these two sets of law, which is scientific law, leading to knowledge, technological advancement, then the spiritual side is being neglected. Neglected in the sense that they don't know the importance of having this spiritual understanding. So the spiritual laws that governs life and existence, which are the other three, Kama Niyama, Chitta Niyama, and Dhamma Niyama, that one is dying, not growing, not flourishing. Earlier on, at one time when the Buddha came, it came back, it flourished, then it went down. Then you had to wait till Hui Ning, the sixth patriarch, then it rise again. Then after that, it went down again. So hopefully, with time now, especially the sasana still around, there are great beings that can come and revive this, but it's not easy, it takes time. Very few beings have this type of awareness-based meditative understanding to teach in this manner, going direct to the true mind, like winning. To realize our true mind. To do that, you must go beyond the mundane mind. That's why the first hallmark of Hui Ning's teaching is Wu Nian, no thought. You can realize the state of no thought. You are in that state of samadhi, your true mind. You will realize it. And how to have no thought? That's why you have to relax and maintain awareness. Don't do anything. Let the thought slow down, sankhara slow down until it ceases. Then you return to your original state before the stirring, before the delusion, the sankhara activity. This is how you realize your true mind. This is how you should meditate. And this understanding is lost. In the past, I cannot teach you direct way to meditate this way. Everybody will run away. You know, the book also never say, nobody taught like that. Monk also never taught like that. But now I can, because there are more and more Kayamita who had experienced it, developed the understanding that over the years of sharing, I gave you a lot of pointer. That's how that book, Unique Code, by Brother Teo, came about. And some Kayamita have the understanding to pick it up and see the importance of it. Especially Sister Ingbi, Teo, then later on Sister Cake, and now many. Now even Po Cheng and Alicia, they all. Many. They have actually develop the understanding and appreciate what all these things are. So with the recent sharing by Song and Miss Lee, I think on the awareness nature, it has developed a lot of understanding and interest, and it will benefit many people. And Po Cheng's experience also very useful. Ingbi's experience also very useful. Then many other Kayamitas. So this is what the true teaching is all about, the true Dhamma. And from no thought, the awareness-based nature, you can meditate. Then when you meditate and develop the silent mind to observe, to awaken, to insight into phenomena, to understand, then that wisdom will transform you. Then you will realize the second hallmark of winning. You will come to realize that there is no mark in all things. There is no mark of a self cultivating Sakkaya Ditthi. You will never be deluded anymore. You know what the form and mind is, what your segmented form and mind is. Like this segmented form and mind of mine you call Brother Teo. This is not me. This is my karmically conditioned form and mind. Vehicle and tool for me to come to this existential world, to live life, to fulfill my vow, to experience everything that my nature needs to experience, including fulfilling my vows, serving humanity, fulfilling the four great vows, plus all the other miscellaneous vows. So all this, the understanding will be there. So that first hallmark of no self means no mark of a self cultivating, then you will also through that indirectly induce, since you don't exist, how can others exist? That's why there is also no mark of others, living beings. Then you will also finally come to realize the empty nature of existence, no mark of life, no mark of existence, no mark of Dhamma, nothing. All this doesn't have reality. That's why that second phase is to realize no mark. The second hallmark of winning. You can realize that you are already a great being. You will never have problem anymore. Then you can teach, you can share. You can fulfill your vow, you can do a lot of things when you have realized the second hallmark of winning. And after that, you can continue to cultivate until your mundane mind collapses. And when your mundane mind collapses, when you locate the gateway, stabilize everything, then your mundane mind collapses, you will realize the third hallmark of winning. that is non-dwelling, 无住. So I repeat the three hallmark, 无念, which is no thought, then 无相, which is no mark, then 无住, non-dwelling, the mind that doesn't dwell anyway. That mind is your true mind, your supramundane mind, your true nature, that one just shine forth, ever shining, completely luminous, clarity, just awareness nature. It's always in the state of awareness, either specific phenomenal awareness or spacious awareness without a center. So that is the beauty of Huining's teaching. That's why it's so powerful. That's why this awareness-based meditation is very unique, very, very fast. So Huining take you direct to the true mind so that you don't have to waste time doing all the thought-based meditation, the method, the technique, the whatever. So all those you can skip actually. It's straight away the fastest. Relax, maintain awareness for as long as you can to stabilize the understanding of the true mind, to realize the true mind. And then from there, you start. That's why meditation becomes easy. That true mind can insight into meditation, can insight into phenomena to realize the three universal characteristics. And it can also awaken. When it awakens, it just understands. Then it can also silently observe nature to realize the truth, to realize what is. That's why meditation is a choiceless awareness of what is the reality. It can see things as they are. That's how it awakens, develop the wisdom. And the mundane mind that has the wisdom connected transform, and that one no longer deluded. That's why it is free of affliction, free of from suffering. Nothing can disturb it. That is the mind that you need to really live life. Okay, we'll continue from where we stop on the notes. I think we have finished this paragraph. Finish already. Mastery in practice of samadhi. Okay, now I continue the last paragraph. In this world, who is free of affliction? A very good question. We can sometimes listen to the Dhamma and feel very joyous, but afterwards we may encounter a negative emotion or situation, or allow people who we have negative affinity with to affect us. Or when we hear something unpleasant, our mind may give rise to affliction and anger. Means you don't have wisdom, you don't have samadhi. You can still react to sense experience. Your mind can still stir. You are still emotional. Since we are still ordinary beings in the process of learning and cultivating the Buddha's teaching, no matter what we encounter, we must move forward with the spirit of the three notes. There is no one I cannot love. That is the first note. No one I cannot forgive. And no one I cannot trust. So her way, her skillful means, her advice is, because she go through the cultivation this way, you can give it a try. If you find it useful, maybe you can use it. It's a skillful means. Thus, no matter what situation we encounter, we can be kind and understanding and not allow greed, hatred, and delusion to arise. So this is one of the skillful means, is learn to love yourself and love everyone. Then learn to forgive and forget. Then learn to trust your nature. When you trust your nature, you can trust all things. Trusting your nature means let your nature decide, because life is such. When you have cultivated that type of nature, it will move in that direction. That's why, unless you have gone astray, deluded, then your karmic nature will fall. Then you cannot trust that karmic nature which has fallen. But when I say trust your nature, means you have cultivated correctly, appropriately, and you know your nature is beautiful. That's why no matter what happens, you just echo and flow and let things be. You don't have to technically do anything. Just when condition is such, thing will be such. Just maintain the wisdom and the understanding and move. So here, she is using this skillful means. Means she believes in having universal love. No one I cannot love, including loving herself. Then no one she cannot forgive. That's why we use the universal formula to ask for forgiveness. I taught you all in the chanting book, whomsoever from the distant past, you don't want to know who, whether knowingly or unknowingly, that this nature of mind have done any coming negativity, suffering, misery, or misled. This nature of mind would like to sincerely ask for forgiveness from them all. So this one is very important. Then finally is trust. So here you have to be careful. When he say there is no one I cannot trust, it doesn't mean that you should trust everybody and etc. Those evil people, violent people, people who cannot be trusted, you don't go and simply trust them. Here, the meaning is different. Means when you are sincere, when you have faith in the way, in the Buddha Dharma, in your nature, you just echo and flow, persevere. Means you trust your nature. When you trust your nature, you don't have to suspect anything. Understand not? You don't have to be suspicious of anybody, no need. Because that trust comes from understanding. When you trust your nature will develop the understanding for you to move. Then you will know how to see the sign. Then you will know how to accord and flow and avoid the foolish, the heedless. Meet up with the wise. That's the aspiration we make. So all this understanding will come about. Maybe that way suit the author. But for me, that trust, I understand it differently. Anyway, you make your own appropriate choice. Having learned that all things in this world constantly change with the passing of time, what is there for us to quarrel about? Wait, I check whether that is the correct place we end. Oh, sorry, there's another paragraph we haven't finished. Okay, after the three no's, only then can we train our mind to become peaceful, undisturbed, and unattached. Okay, this part we will have to explain a bit. You see, unless you have developed the Dhamma understanding, the wisdom part, you cannot have a mind that is peaceful, undisturbed, and unattached. To do that, you must have wisdom. Thus, no matter what situation we encounter, we can be kind and understanding and not allow greed, hatred, and delusion to arise. This part may be more difficult for you all to understand. I explain a bit. So according to the author, he said, no matter what situation we encounter in life, we can be kind and understanding and not allow greed, hatred, and delusion to arise. This is basically applying Noble Eightfold Path. Whatever life situation that arise, we must know how to act. We must not act according to memory. That's why acting according to memory is not acting at all. And Krishnamurti realized that because memory is knowledge, accumulated knowledge. What are memory? Our accumulated experiences, good and bad. So within our memory, there is a lot of negative tendency, and thought is respond to memory. So if you act according to memory, all this thought become wrong thought. Because what we accumulate in our memory is mainly psychological memory that has afflicted us, or moments in life that are very tragic, or of course sometimes once a while also good moments where we really had the attachment and craving and clinging towards it. But most of the time is our scars of memory that we accumulate and we try to forget, but we can't. Our phobia, our insecurity, our deep resentment, our unhappiness. So all these are very negative type of psychological memory that we accumulate. And sometimes we hold on to our emotion, our anger, our deep resentment and hatred, unhappy moments. Then there is also all this accumulated fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, things that we experience when life are not easy, when we have to go through extreme conditions, situation. So all this can bring about a severe mental block, or what we call mental accumulation of all this wrong thought, psychological memories that are very detrimental towards a happy life. So sometimes this fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, insecurity, scars of memory, they are negative emotion. They give rise to negative vibration, especially fear. When fear become very intense, it can have the power to cause our immune system to break down. Then when we are sad, sorrowful, emotional, we don't have joy, we don't have love, we cannot smile, we cannot have peace, we cannot have tranquility, stillness of mind, the mind of a cultivator. That's not acting according to memory, it's not acting at all, because all of thought that arise are wrong thought, conditioned by the negative emotion that we accumulate, the psychological memories. So this is the aspect of Dhamma that people cannot understand. And my nature understand because I saw them all. And this is not in the traditional Theravada teaching or Mahayana teaching or the standard text. How to relate the teaching, the Dhamma, with real life example. So without this understanding, you cannot move. That's why how to act in life is very important. So always remember, acting according to memory is not acting at all. Reflect on what I share today again. Listen to it carefully. Develop the stability of understanding. Then you will know why you cannot act according to memory. because memory is full of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. All these negative psychological memory or emotion, they are all with the evil roots, and they condition wrong thought, make you miserable. And what are wrong thoughts? Thoughts that condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your deep resentment and unhappiness. These are all wrong thoughts. It's like acting according to memory. It's not acting at all. Here you act according to your fear, your insecurity, your wrong view, your delusion. Memory holds a lot of views, opinion, conditioning, belief system. And these are not wisdom, these are not true. That's why you act according to that. You are acting from delusion, negativity of mind state. So never, never act from memory. But then some may ask, if I don't act from memory, how can I act? Because I have to recall a lot of things. Recalling is okay. Recollecting is okay. But don't go and cling on to your views, opinion, habitual tendency and negative tendency, and from there you create thought, wrong thought, respond to memory. Your thought is respond to memory. If you constantly do that, it becomes habitual. Then you every time go back to memory, that's why you cannot act. And you look at the teaching, how do you act? The Buddha already explained in his teaching, the essence of his teaching, the Four Noble Truths. The First Noble Truth explained to us the reality of life and existence. That is not teaching you how to act. That is teaching you to understand the reality of life and existence, the eight realities, so that you are not deluded. Then the Second Noble Truth talks about the cause of arising of this suffering and misery. Born of the First Noble Truth, when you don't have the Dhamma understanding, when you don't have the wisdom. Again, that one doesn't teach you how to act. It just explains to you the cause of arising of this suffering and misery. So when you will know the cause, at least you can manage your life better. Then you go on to the next Third Noble Truth. Third Noble Truth says suffering need not be enlightenment in the here and the now can be realized, Nibbana can be realized. Again, that is not teaching you how to act. That is just telling you that the mind can be transformed and become enlightened, awakened. Means when you are enlightened, you need not suffer. Suffering need not be. Again, it doesn't teach you how to act. But the Fourth Noble Truth is different. And this is where the Buddha's teaching stand out. The Buddha said there is a Fourth Noble Truth that explained to us clearly. There is a way to realize this enlightenment. There is a path, namely the Noble Eightfold Path. He said if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. Because all suffering cease. You don't have to suffer anymore. And you meditate to realize what? Enlightenment in the here and the now, so that there is no suffering. So that is the way to act. That is the path that leads to the enlightenment, the end of all suffering, your misery. So acting according to memory is not acting at all. So how should you act? You should act according to wisdom, the Dhamma way that the Buddha has taught us. That's why the Buddha say you must cultivate, reflect, contemplate, inquire, meditate to awaken, to realize the truth, the wisdom. He called it yoniso manasikara, wisdom. That's why you have to act according to understanding or act according to wisdom, following the Dhamma way, which is following Noble Eightfold Path. So you act following Noble Eightfold Path, what happened? You will have right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. All this have no negativity, no evil root, because it's about wisdom. Then you will also have the four appropriate right effort to cultivate the abandon the negativity of action, speech, and thought process to prevent the arising of all this negativity or action, speech, and thought process. Then the right effort to cultivate the right thought, right speech, right action, and right way of living life, they are still not in you. Then the final one is to refine upon and perfect all this virtue, wisdom, and understanding. So the four right effort will also be there without negativity. It's a purification process. Then you will have right samadhi, right sati, mindfulness. That's how Noble Eightfold Path give you that ability to act. You act with a mind that has samadhi, that has sati and samadhi, where it is tranquil, peaceful, collected and unwavering, connected with the right view of wisdom. That's how you act. Acting according to wisdom, following the Dhamma way, which is following the Noble Eightfold Path. So whatever happened in life, go back to the Noble Eightfold Path. Then you will not go wrong. Then use your wisdom, Yonisomanasikara, let it prompt you. The Dhamma understanding always surface. All the things that the Buddha has taught us, Rupang Anichang, Rupang Anatta, Vedana Anichang, Vedana Anatta, Sanya Anichang, Sanya Anatta, Sankara Anichang, Sankara Anatta, Vinyana Anichang, Vinyana Anatta. Then the Buddha summarized, Sabbe Sankara Anichang. Then whenever you see certain thing happening, that wisdom just surface, Sankara Anichang, no need to think, no need to reflect, no need to contemplate, no need to do anything. But these are all Sankara. Sankara Anichang, it leads to Dukkang. Sabbe Sankara Dukkang, then Sabbe Dhamma Anatta, non-self, empty nature. So all this will surface. Then thing is just the way it is. The world is the world. People are just the way they are, according to what I have explained to you about the Buddha's right view. Yet the Buddha said very simple thing. He told the monk, strive on with heedfulness. Whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. That statement is so powerful. That one is enlightenment, awakening. You know, whatever that arise means in life, whatever situation that you encounter is the phenomena at that time, the condition at that time. So whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind, which means that is the reality, that is truth, that is the isness of things, that is what is the reality. So we have to accept first. We don't go and react and stir our mind and become miserable, full of anger, hatred. These are all evil. If we can't be at peace to accept the reality of the moment, means we are deluded. We don't have wisdom. That's why we cannot be at peace. Dhamma is about developing this understanding and wisdom to be at peace with all situations, all conditions. That's why all these teachings are so beautiful. They fall into place. And when you understand, they are all connected, linked. One big picture. That's why you must understand the totality, the whole, for you to really awaken. Otherwise, you become fragmented, like the thought, limited. It's not the wisdom, it's not a complete understanding. When you understand all the nature's law that governs life and existence, then you have complete understanding of the reality. Otherwise, you cannot. That's why the Dhamma way is most beautiful. So with that, I think we can go back to the sharing. The notes. So today, the explanation is very detailed, very deep, very important. You all should slowly go through it again, listen to it again and again, and develop the stability of understanding, then write it down, contemplate, reflect until very, very stable, until you can act and live it. Means it can become a part of your understanding, your nature. You can live that Dhamma. It's not just knowledge. Yeah. That's why the stability of understanding is very important. Constantly contemplate, reflect until very, very stable. Mm. That's why in the early days of my training, I remember, I received many times advice. We just contemplate until very, very clear. That message keep on coming to me, especially for Ajayantra initially, no less than 6 times. Then I realized contemplation is very important. That is the second turning wisdom. Because after you have the insight, even the third turning, a glimpse, you have to reflect and contemplate so that it stabilized. And I did a lot of that thing when I was going through the cultivation. But my past helped me. Yeah, whatever I reflect, I contemplate, I recollect through life experience, then I recall my past. Then the understanding just arise. Like a lot of these things, I never learned this life. Then how did I know? How did I understand? Because from my past cultivation, my nature connect back and inherited them. That's why from there, the understanding keep on arising. Okay, I'll read on. If we do not fight over things, then naturally we will be peaceful, content, and contriving, and free from desire. So this is the subheading. And we will stay always, we will stay away from delusion and heedless thinking. Since beginningless time, we have been accumulating negative habitual tendency. This is very true for those deluded ones, due to ignorance and affliction. We have only just begun our spiritual cultivation, and the Buddha's infinite wisdom is difficult to penetrate. This one is very true for people who are new, who don't have their past. Though we have the karmic affinity to come into contact with the Buddha's teaching, can we really enter the door to the Buddha's wisdom? It seems very difficult. Because of this, the Buddha uses many skillful means or skillful ways to gently and patiently guide us. In the Buddha's lifetime, when the Buddha was in Jeta Grove, here they call Jeta Garden, Jeta Vana Grove. There was a couple that had only one child. When she was born, a sudden strong gust of wind brought a beautiful small white blanket made of very soft material to her parents. It enfolded the baby girl in just the right way, so she was named White Purity. From the time she was small, White Purity kept the blanket wrapped around her and never took it off. Amazingly, with the passing of time, and as the girl grew up, grew older, the blanket also grew with her and became bigger. So it always fit her body perfectly. This Chataka story, I haven't heard, I don't know. Maybe you all have heard. Maybe not in the Theravada teaching. Anyway, it's an interesting teaching. Even as a child, White Purity was intelligent and wise. She was pure and innocent, as well as lovable and clever. As she grew older, she became very beautiful with a fair and rosy complexion. Many of the king's kinsmen proposed marriage to her, but she was completely uninterested in them. She was the apple of her family's or parents' eye, and her parents had long ago prepared an elaborate dowry for her. But one day she told her parents, "I want to leave home and become a monastic." Her parents were already devout disciples of the Buddha and would often seek teaching from the Buddha when they heard their daughter's wish to become a bhikkhuni. They happily agreed and said, "We will prepare a monastic robe for you." White Purity replied, "There is no need. I have had this blanket since I was little. This can be my monastic robe." The parent thought that as long as their daughter was happy, then it was acceptable. They accompanied White Purity to the Buddha. As they came before him, they humbly said, "Our daughter would like to become a monastic." The Buddha replied happily, "Welcome, bhikkhuni. You may now shave your own head." After she shaved her own head, the Buddha said to her, "Go to Maha Prajapati Sangha and mindfully engage in spiritual practice from there." So Maha Prajapati is the maternity mother, the sister of the maternity mother of Sakyamuni Buddha, actually. It seems according to the Jataka story, the Buddha, after he was born, 1 week later, the mother passed away. And it was the sister, Maha Prajapati, who took over the role of the mother to care for him and to nurture him and raise him. So initially, the Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha, was reluctant to actually allow the bhikkhuni order because he can see from the past event. Normally, if you allow a bhikkhuni order, that sasana will be shortened by 500 years. So to the Buddha, 500 years of sasana can help many people. That's why initially he was reluctant. But later on, through the appeal by many bhikkhunis, lady who wants to join the order. Then finally, I think Ananda also, on their behalf, helped to appeal. Then Ananda told the Buddha, "Even your this Maha Prajapati also came and request. She is the one that raised you and care for you, sacrifice, protect you, and do everything for you. How can you not repay that kindness and all those things?" So finally, the Buddha gave in and allowed the bhikkhuni order. That's how it started, but he introduced a lot more rules so as to try to mitigate the 500 years of shortened sasana. So this rule makes the bhikkhuni order having a lot more precept than the monk. The monk has the monk has certain number of precept, but the bhikkhuni order has a lot more. That is to protect the order. Okay, I will read on. Thus, White Purity came to belong to the community of bhikkhuni led by the, they call it the Buddha's aunt, actually it's the mother's sister who had raised the Buddha, yes. White Purity had a pure nature and was very diligent. So after joining the monastic community, she quickly attained arahantship very fast, very easy. Once the Venerable Ananda asked the Buddha, "What were the karmic causes and conditions from previous life that enabled bhikkhuni White Purity to become a monastic in this lifetime with such ease and to successfully attain arahantship?" The Buddha then told Ananda that in the past, at the time of Kassapa Buddha, there was a couple that was very poor, so poor that they did not even have clothes. They shared one blanket between them and begged for a living. Whoever went out to beg for food would wear the blanket, while the other would stay at home and cover his whole body with grass. In this way, They took turn wearing the blanket. This Jakarta story I've heard before in the Theravada tradition. It's very interesting. So one day the woman wear the blanket, and as she was out begging for food, she met a bhikkhu who was begging for alms. She told him, "I don't have anything. All I have is this blanket." The bhikkhu then told her about the karmic causes and conditions that it would lead one to poverty, and engaged her to give and listen to the Buddha's expound the Dhamma. So she discussed it with her husband. "We were born with such poor fortune. It is because we did not perform charity or dana parami in our past life. I would like to give this blanket to the Buddha as an offering. What do you think?" The husband said, "We need this blanket to beg for food. If we give it away, how will we live?" The wife said, "Every day we depend on begging just to get by. Eventually we will die. We may as well make use of this opportunity and ask this bhikkhu to take the blanket and offer it to the Buddha." The husband joyously agreed, "You are right. It is precisely because of our poverty that brings such suffering that we have to take advantage of this opportunity to create blessings." After the bhikkhu received the blanket, he brought it to Kassapa Buddha and gave it to him as an offering. The Buddha smiled as he received the dirty, foul, smelly blanket. His expression was happier than when he received very rare and valuable offerings. The king and minister who were present there did not understand what they were seeing. They asked the Buddha, "It's just a foul smelling and dirty blanket. Why is the world honored one so joyful?" Kassapa Buddha said, "This blanket was a couple's only materialistic asset. They did not spare anything they had in making this sincere offering. This kind of pure and undefiled heart makes the most superior offering." So because of that, that thing can happen. The Buddha told Ananda that the impoverished woman who offered the blanket to Kassapa Buddha was now white purity. With a pure heart, she had resolutely aspired to engage in spiritual cultivation. From then on, life after life, her mind was developed. She didn't use the word focus. The mind was collected and unwavering and serene and never wavered. She was peaceful, content, uncontriving, and free from desire in her practice or cultivation. Then in this particular lifetime, she was able to meet Sakyamuni Buddha and receive the Buddha Dharma. With the right set of karmic causes and conditions, she became a monastic and quickly attained arahantship. Okay, good. We stop here. So this is beautiful. So you really can cultivate dana parami. This is the reward. So now we will open up for second session. Meditation reporting followed by whatever Q&A, question and answer, or sharing of the Dhamma.
Evening, Brother Teo, and all Kalyana Mitas.
Yeah, sadhu, Susan, welcome.
Sadhu, yeah. Caught by surprise and don't know where to start.
That is the best reply. Like Sister Gay last session also. Is it what to say? Right. That is sincere from inside. You are not prepared.
It's true.
That is the true one. So don't go to memory. From there, come out.
Right.
Very good, Sadhu.
Well, one thing I noticed is through Brother Teo's guidance and teaching today, for me, it was a good revision.
Sadhu, very good.
Of the, you know, it's like going through the Bodhipakyas, the 37 Bodhipakyas.
Because that
actually culminates the total teachings and the way and the path towards achieving enlightenment. So having all this precious information that in the past brought forth by you, Brother Teo, and other teachers as well. And this actually, gives a very comprehensive understanding of what are the steps, the ways to be on the path to realize, to have realization. So it was a very, very good and recollection.
Recollection and revision,
yes.
Like you said.
Yes, that's right. So I guess that's what
do you have any other
I
questions?
Can say.
Can, no problem. Any other question or any other sharing about Dhamma in daily life that you have experienced since cultivating the Dhamma?
One thing for sure is that the mind is more collect.
More collected
now. More collected now, and not as reactive.
As last time.
As it used to be.
Yeah, it used to be. Yes.
There's completely no reaction. There is. But
much
even
less,
yeah, much, much less. And even when there is such a rising very quickly, you can I guess the word sub is not the right word to use, subdue, at least very
you
quickly
can stabilize your mind.
It tapers off
You can calm down and stabilize your mind.
You will
not be so reactive like last time.
Right.
So panicky or so worried. All this, no more. A lot of Kayamita are able to do that. They realize they are no longer like last time. Last time, a lot of this Kayamita who have not developed the understanding of the Dhamma. Certain thing very personal or like very traumatic or very dangerous. They react and freak out very fast. And they don't know what to do. But now, different. That's why they remember my advice. Whatever happened, do not panic. Do not worry. Do not project your thought. So all this they learn. Accept the reality, calm down, have a calm mind with clarity, ask yourself what happened, then ask yourself how can I act, how can I move forward to resolve issue amicably, then act according to wisdom, the Dhamma way, following Noble Eightfold Path. And all this will surface, then you will know what to do, then you will not act according to your habitual tendency, your memory, your whatever views and opinion and conditioning. All this is to be. That's how the understanding of the Dhamma can actually transform an individual and make them different. And I believe, like you share, you have that experience. That's why you are now different. You are more collected, more calm, more composed, less reactive. Of course, you cannot like subdue everything. Sometimes that subdue is actually a negative connotation, yes. Like suppressing. And that's how they suppress the emotion. Instead, they use the word, I have subdued my anger, because they suppress the anger. Subdue is a bad, is a, for me,
it's yeah, it's not the right word to use. Yeah.
So why should I subdue? No. Yeah. If I have wisdom, I can accept and let it be. Then no more problem. Subdue means trying to control that thing, trying to suppress that thing. Like subdue that violent people, make him pain. No point, no need to subdue. You can just develop the understanding and wisdom. If it's without condition, you just move away and want. That's why you make the aspiration. Ipina punyang kamina. You make aspiration by the power of this punya merits. May arise the causes and conditions for my nature to avoid the foolish and the heedless, meet out with the wise. So all this will channel you to the correct, appropriate situation, so that you will not get yourself entangled and become heedless. So the Dhamma way is very beautiful. You continue, Susan, you can continue.
Well, I've noticed also that with the blessings of this MCOC, MCOE, MCO, and what have you, well, it the condition is just superb.
Yeah, superb.
Superb. that is the word, because because more. Putting in more time into the practice. A lot of reflective time as well. It is, like I say, a blessing. condition. And every time the 2 weeks come up, it's like, oh, it's going to end, thing. But then somehow condition continues.
Again.
That's true. Yes, again. It is very, very good that way. And I feel that there's more awareness, the daily life. Not just only during the formal sitting practice.
Meditation.
Not just meditation.
Yeah.
Of course, during meditation, the mind is not as scattered as it used to be. Not that wild. That's right. So it is calmer, it's more still, but and also able to notice the mind move.
The mental state.
The mental states.
That one very important. It make you more sensitive.
Yeah.
Then you become more understanding.
That's when
you are sensitive, may you see yourself. Then you ask yourself, why should I react? Why should I stir? How come this thing make me this way? So all this is what meditation is all about, the observation part. When you observe yourself, you realize most people, before they have the Dhamma and the wisdom, they are not peaceful. They are very reactive. To them, they thought their life is peaceful. They are happy because they got money and all. But if you are mindful, sensitive, you can see almost every moment, every instant, they stir their mind, they react. Sometimes very subtle, but they cannot see the slight dislike, aversion, unhappiness, fear, anxiety. They cannot see all this. That's why as a cultivator with daily mindfulness stabilized, you become different. You become very sensitive. Then you start to see the subtle greed, the subtle delusion, the subtle emotion, the envy, the jealousy, the slight dislike, all these things. You start to see them. And this is what meditation is all about. When you start to see them, then you realize what the Buddha meant. The living being, the Puttujana, before they are enlightened, they are really ignorant, deluded. And that word is very appropriate. We tend to have this wrong understanding. We think, hey, we are university graduate, or we have tertiary education, or how can the Buddha say we are ignorant or deluded? Really, when I saw that thing, I remember in the 1988, before 89, I realized the Buddha was very accurate. Human beings, before they become enlightened, they are really deluded, heedless, ignorant, really true. Ignorant. You have a lot of Dhamma, spiritual understanding and truth. You don't understand. You have a lot of knowledge.
Right.
And that is dangerous. Actually, knowledge by. So, spiritual understanding is not there. Then I realized a lot of things we do, we actually make a mess of our life. Yeah. That's how I start to reverse all the cultivation. That's how I straighten my view. That's how I actually change. Then I develop the transformation. Then I saw all this. That's why I see the importance of daily mindfulness later. Because without the daily mindfulness, you are not sensitive. You cannot see. That's why without daily mindfulness, there is no way you can become enlightened, awakened. Without mindfulness, you cannot stabilize it to become heedfulness. So the heedless are as if they, and that was so true. That's why when I teach, I use the Buddha's Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23. They are very important and I highlighted them. So without the daily mindfulness stabilized, there is no heedfulness in the midst of life. If you are heedless in the midst of life, the Buddha said the heedless are as if dead. You don't stand a chance. So that shows the importance of daily mindfulness, stabilizing it and developing it into heedfulness. To be heedful, you have to be constantly meditative, ever mindful. So to do that, you have to first train your mind to be mindful, then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And that's how the cultivator should move. Very good, huh? Susan. Yeah, you can continue. Sorry to interrupt.
Continue. Yes, there's one thing I noticed, Brother Teo, again during this period of so-called confinement. Actually like confinement.
Best thing is this, guys. Huh?
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Is that there is this awareness of kilesas arising.
Very important.
Kilesas.
Because in the past,
There's always this tendency to put aside, which in other words, not looking at reality.
Correct.
Looking out for the beautiful and wonderful conditions.
Correct. Go ahead.
That make one happy.
Yeah, but it's not reality. What you say is very true. Our senses are always outwardly looking.
Yes.
They never look within. That's why we cannot see our own shortcoming, our own kalesa, our own defilement, our own negativity or mind state. So human beings' problem is before they have the Dhamma and the sensitivity of awareness or mindfulness, they can't see all this. So to them, their views, their opinion, and their conditioning are so strong. Their belief system are so strong. So they are always looking outward. Then they comment. They say, this guy shouldn't do this. How can he do that? How can he make a mess of everything? So every time they look out, their finger is pointing outside. And they use their views, opinion, and conditioning and belief system to hit out at others, to argue with the world, and to justify whatever they do. But they can't see their own kilesa within. That's why they fail to understand that by doing that, the karma is negative. They become heedless. And they do a lot of wrong things. And through that, they entangle themselves. That's why they are not happy. They are seldom peaceful. They are seldom aware. There is no Noble Eightfold Path at all. They are very crude in the way they communicate, talk to people, or even react to situations. They are very crude. They don't have right view, right understanding. And their speech, most of the time, very, very rude, very crude, and lack wisdom, lack gentleness, lack understanding. So all the virtue of Noble Eightfold Path are not there. And I realized cultivator only start doing this after they have developed the mindfulness, the understanding, and later part, when they cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, then only all this virtue and understanding starts to develop, especially the four right effort. You have to go through that. Then only all these things fall into place. That's why the stages of cultivation, they actually are very beautiful when you understand. So your sharing today is very good, Susan. You bring about the condition for all this to arise. Because for you, you saw them. But you can't put them into words to actually express it out beautifully. So your this sharing is very good, so that wherever I can, I will help you to express it so that everybody can learn from it and develop the understanding. Very good.
Sadhu. Yeah.
Anything else you want to share?
Okay, this last thing, I don't know if time permits.
Yeah, still have time.
The thing is that having seen the kilesas arising, understanding also arises, I guess, in little ways.
Yeah.
That these kilesas are just mental factors, just sankharas as well.
Defilements.
Defilements. They are defilements. Yeah. But it's all in the mind as well. Having the arisings of all this and mindful of the arisings, it is a purifying process. Hello?
Yeah, correct.
I realize that it is a
It's a purifying
process.
Yeah, correct.
Process.
Mm.
Yes. So long way to go.
Yeah.
Slowly and surely.
Yeah, you will develop it.
Walking this step.
Yeah.
Yeah. It will develop.
Mm, sadhu. Yeah. That's why my daughter just now also said, as you purify, you actually straighten your views. You straighten your views. That's what purification of mind is all about.
Right.
When you straighten your view, less and less wrong view, then through that you will have more and more right view. And that right view is actually Dhamma, Yonisoka Manasikara, wisdom at the moment of sense experience. So this one will keep on surfacing, keep on surfacing. That's why from the awareness you see of Kalesa. So Kalesa is normal mental defilement. But later on, it becomes habitual. They form latent tendency. The Buddha call it anusaya. Anusaya is latent tendency. Wow, that one very strong. Latent in you one. Oh.
Very deep-seated, that one.
Already accumulated, very deep one. So that one come on. Then there is another one, was asavak. Wow, asavak means like shooting out or no. Like certain people, a lot of anger, a lot of hatred, then some a lot of fear because of coming and all. So these asava, they are there in their mind state. So throughout the day, it erupt, shoot out. That's why asava, anusaya, these are more strong defilement. Whereas kalesa is normal defilement. Normal defilement is called Kalesa.
Kalesa.
That has the evil roots of greed, hatred, delusion. But they have not become anusaya.
Right.
Then they have not developed into asava. Asava means very, very latent and very fast erupting. Latent most of the time is like Eckhart Tolle say, is a pain body. But they are not not active yet. There are no condition for it to trigger off. So they call it the dormant.
Dormant.
Dormant means not active yet, like volcano dormant.
Yeah.
Erupt out here. But inside there, hot button, when you press, then it erupt one. That one become anusaya.
So Brother Teo, at the anusaya, it is also what the in the Mahayana teachings and all is in the alaya.
Yeah, alaya consciousness.
Yeah, the alaya.
The alaya consciousness, is the soul consciousness that store all of the sankhara movement since birth until death. Birth until death. They call it the storehouse consciousness, alaya consciousness. Yeah. So within there, you have, before you become enlightened, you have all the three. Kalesa, becoming anusaya, then develop into asava. So all this, the Buddha taught them in the Theravada Sutta. It's very interesting. When I read all this Pali word, I become very joyful. I can understand what these words are. And it become like very easy to comprehend. Sadhu. Very good.
Sadhu.
Thanks for creating the condition.
Thank you.
Sadhu, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank
sharing. Let us rejoice. Sadhu.
Sadhu. Sadhu.
Sadhu.
I'm not sure what I want to share, but probably because of this MCO, a lot of us has been listening to Dharma Talks through Zoom. I mean, we are spoilt for choice, actually. So, I was just wondering. Actually, I shared something with Tracy.
I actually,
it was a very impulsive thing I did. It was just out of the blues. So I can't even recall what
phone,
I
huh? The WhatsApp.
It's a code, I think.
You want her to read to you?
Yeah, yeah, she can if she wants.
He can pull out the WhatsApp. You wait, huh? She will read to you.
So how have you been, Susan? Gosh, I have not really seen you for almost a year.
Good. Good. Yeah, that's right. Just very quickly, Brother Song, thank you for giving me that opportunity. Yeah?
How yeah. come all of them are not putting yeah. on their good. Video screen? Like
Wait, my daughter has it already. She will read to you, Joyce.
I can share.
She can share screen also, yeah. Yeah. Y'all can see, yeah?
So, Sister Joyce sent this to me just before class, actually. It was, I think, from
Anuttara Anikaya.
There are these five rewards in listening to the Dhamma.
Yeah.
Which five? One hears what one has not heard before. One clarifies what one has heard before. One gets rid of doubt. One's views are made straight. And one's mind grows serene.
Oh, very good.
These are the five rewards in listening to the Dhamma.
Anguttara Anikaya.
Yeah.
Very good. Oh, this one is very good. I did know there is a Nikaya that talks about the five benefits of listening to the true Dhamma. It's very beautiful. Yeah. Exactly what we share.
Actually, it's from, I think it's from Dhamma Savana, Savana Sutta.
Yeah.
It's quite, I came across it by chance. So it was quite, as I was saying, it is quite reflective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of us actually just kind of let the Dhamma talks run through us.
Yeah.
And not beyond.
What is mentioned there is very true.
Yeah.
The benefit, the first benefit is very true. You hear something that you never hear before. Because a lot of Dhamma understanding is very new to people. Then after that, you straighten your view, you clear your doubt. Then you develop serenity of mind and all this. Very beautiful. Maybe we read. I will go through it, read. Then you can develop better understanding. So there are five rewards in listening to the Dhamma which the Buddha has actually shared first under the Anguttara Nikaya, 5.2.02. He said, when one hears the Dhamma, you get the five following benefits. One hears what one has not heard before. So this is very true. Because Dhamma is very new. Then one clarifies what one has heard before. Means if what you have heard before, your belief system, your views, your opinion, if it's not in accordance, you can clarify them. That's how you get rid of your doubt. One gets rid of doubt. Then the fourth one is one gets to straighten one's view. So our views are made straight. Then the last one is one's mind grows serene. You become calm, peaceful. And you have faith, you have confidence. So these are the five rewards in listening to the Dhamma. Yeah? This is beautiful. Some simple Dhamma sharing from Joyce. Very good. Thanks. Now you continue, Joyce. Yeah.
I only put the quote as a simple sharing for some mind reflection. You know, like I say, we've been listening to a lot of Dhamma talks through Zoom. And somehow it came to mind that what do we do with it? How do we make sure that we make use of it, and what are the benefits, and how do we go about it? I think it is on the surface it seems pretty simple, but I think a deeper reflections will bring about setting some kind of a goal for your practice, and also to make sure that the next time we listen to a Dhamma talk, that we do have the appropriate attention.
Yeah.
And also from the appropriate attention, I think we can find that listening to the Dharma each time is quite different, and each time is more deeper.
Yeah.
Or it can also be telling you that you have actually missed the goal point, the goal post as well, and you're far away from it.
Yeah. So
there are many variables in this quote, so it all depends on where you come from and how you want to go about it, how you want to do it.
Very true.
Yeah. And this kind of reflection is my personal experience is that it's never the same with another person, because we are all very different from So the only thing I know is that when you listen to a Dharma, what the past karma that brings along is something that basically you can't do very much about it. But the present
very
thing,
true.
Is something that you can work on with the right effort and also with the right view, of course.
Yes.
And you always must I'm talking about myself. I always try to remember, I try to tell myself that I always have choices and options.
Mm, yeah.
So don't just hang on to just one belief or one's how you're going to do it,
Don't be rigid, huh?
Yeah, not to be rigid. Yeah, that's the right word. Not to be rigid, and also to be not too strong-headed as well.
Yeah.
So, and I think when you do more reflection on things that you can act upon, you tend to be more grounded, not flying in the air.
Correct.
So I think Dharma is always actually the essential Dharma of what the Buddha used to say. The few leaves in your hand is always the most important.
Yeah.
Of the whole forest. So
yes.
It's not
conducive for enlightenment, awakening.
Yeah.
He taught us the essence, the essential Dharma, we call it. The essential Dharma, the essence, the handful of leaves. You're right. Yeah, Sadhu.
So it all boils down to the Four Noble Truths, actually.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
And the three turning,
Right.
Then they are all interconnected.
You don't have to go very much further from there.
Yeah.
Sometimes you may again miss the goal point, a goal post again.
Yeah.
And then you got to start kicking the ball all over again, finding the right person to pass the ball to, as in the five aggregate of all my mind.
Mm.
So, yeah. I thought it's a very good quote to share.
Adil, very good. Thank you so much. So we should try to end. We are 10:38 already. We should thank Susan and Joyce both for the good sharing, so that we can maybe after this end the sharing. Let us rejoice. Sadhu. Then just to add on a little bit about what Joy shared just now, he said sometimes you miss the goalpost. That one is very true. Yeah, when you listen to Dhamma with rigid mind, rigidity, or with knowledge base and all those things, you really cannot get it, because it depends on your past karma. Like Joy said, past karma, you all cannot change. Yeah, that is a reality. But what she said is true. This moment, this asana, this condition, you have a choice. That's why I make use of this window. And it's beautiful. Then the same explanation can be developed from what I think the last session, Sister Gek, Lee Siu Gek, she shared. She said last time in the early day, awareness nature, she cannot understand. Until finally she zoomed in on my explanation. Awareness is this ability to be aware. Sati is awareness before the knowing. He said that one took her many years to penetrate. So sometimes when you listen with knowledge, with your conditioning, you think you understand, but actually you are not penetrated. But later on, when you really get the essence, when you reflect, contemplate, and develop the understanding, you straighten your view, then you're willing, like Joyce said, investigate into it with an open mind so that you are not rigid. Then you start to develop the contemplation, reflection. Then the awareness will help you, like what Susan shared too. So all this can help you penetrate the Dhamma. Otherwise, it becomes very, very difficult to understand. Because Dhamma need awareness, need sati, need mindfulness, need understanding, need the spiritual faculty of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya. So all these, when you put them together, then like Susan just now shared the 37 factors of enlightenment. When you have this mind state, they are spiritual faculty that can enable you to understand spiritual teaching. So spiritual faculties or enlightenment factors are very important where they can awaken you. They are called the 37 factors that can awaken you. So you combine all this together, you listen attentively, reflect, contemplate, and develop the cultivation, you will progress. That's what Dhamma is all about. So with this, we should one more time rejoice, then we end. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.